Hello and welcome to Trackastic, the fantastic podcast brought to you by Twitter's Atleticos. We are currently cooking our Christmas episode and our Christmas special, looking forward to that. But in the meantime, we've had significant changes to the Diamond League, and this has led to a bit of a revolution with the We Are The Sport movement. And we've had some fascinating interviews from Mary Kane, which hopefully will have some long-lasting repercussions, changing the sport for good. So here to talk about these important developments are the crew.
Carol at Flick22S.
I'm Chris at Chris Brown Sport.
And I'm Kerry at the Petit Cushion.
Are we fighting off colds and flus and the likes, or are we doing good?
Oh, full of the sneeze.
Full of the sneeze.
This today. Yeah.
I've got mine out of the way already, so I'm good.
Speaking of getting things out of the way, guys, we weren't necessarily planning on having this podcast. I think in the back of our mind, the next episode is going to be the Christmas special. But quite a few really significant and important things have happened in the world of track and field lately, right? Starting with changes to the Diamond League, which have instigated a bit of a revolution, right? Spearheaded by the one and only Christian Taylor. I can't think of anybody more suited to spearhead an initiative and a movement like this. And it seems to me that athletes, again, led by Christian Taylor, are working towards something that we have been calling for on this podcast, guys, for many a year, an athletes' union. They're calling themselves the Athletics Association. We Are The Sport. Chris, just talk us through what has happened, how this has come about, and what do you think it's going to mean for the future of track and field?
Well, I think obviously the Diamond League changes were kind of like what spearheaded this revolution, which we've obviously, so we've been saying for years, haven't we, that they should unionize and get something in place. But I think from the sound of it, it's been in the works for quite a while. I read an interview with Dina. She said she's been involved with it for a few months already. So I'm guessing when they announced they were changing the Diamond League a few months ago, maybe that was when they first started discussing this, and then they waited for the moment when they announced which events were being dropped, and that's when they decided to kind of go public with this union. And yeah, I mean, it's a very strong team. You've got, say, Christian Taylor's obviously spearheading it. You've got Omar McLeod and Dina, Kat Stefanidi, Nelson Navarro, Ibargwin, Perkovic, Tom Walsh, I think, and obviously Tiana. Tiana's always there. And Brittany Reese and Reno Lavillenie. So it's, yeah, that's a strong group of athletes right there who are going to hopefully, you know, have meeting. I think they're meeting up with Seb, and they're trying to put their voice across that, you know, why are you messing with our sport when you don't need to, in a way? I mean, obviously things need to change, but you always need to include the athletes in that, because at the end of the day, they are the product. You don't have a product without them, so you need to listen to them at least. But yeah, what do you guys think?
It felt like something was obviously, there's been a bit of a downturn with the jumps going on, because the last couple of years, Tiana and Brittany both decided they weren't going to do any more Diamond Leagues because, well, they just weren't putting them in the program. Mm. So they weren't there for them to do. But it was also earlier this year, Christian Taylor and Will Clay both pulled out, was it Rome Diamond League?
Yeah.
So it felt like they were kind of testing the waters a bit there, and everyone was saying, oh, you're asking for too much money, blah, blah, blah. We don't know the ins and outs of that, but it needs somebody to just step up and say, without us, there won't be anything for anybody to watch. Bunch of blokes sat in a room wearing suits. That's not the sport. It's the athletes, and they're the ones that need to lead this.
What I love about it is when you look at those names, you look at who's involved in the Athletics Association, articulate champion, people who have multiple titles. I think every single one of them has a global title. But the tagline, we are the sport, and we've talked about this, guys, at length. The reason why we love athletics is because of the athletes. There is no sport without the athletes. It's got to the point of incredible narcissism within the IAAF. They talk about this product. They talk about market. There is no product. There is nothing to market without these athletes. And the moment you start treating specific athletes and specific events like shit, then you are telling every other athlete that it could also be you in the future. And we don't value you.
The whole point about the Diamond League and what they've... how they've handled that as well. I mean, I thought the actual press release itself was a bit bizarre. It almost seemed to, like, not blame the fans, but it was almost like, we surveyed fans and this is what we result. So these are the most boring events, according to you guys.
Yeah.
And it was a bit like, well, that's...
But we don't know what question... Because they say what they asked after a few Diamond League events, and they surveyed people in, what was it, China, South Africa... another country. Yeah. We don't know what questions they asked. They could have been framed in such a way to get the answers that they were looking for, and then they presented it to say, well, these 300 people said the steeplechase was boring. That probably wasn't what they asked. They would have... Yeah, they might have gone to a Diamond League that had, like, all the sprints, pole vault and long jump, and everyone's like, oh yeah, yeah, I love those events. Weren't showing the triple jump, so why would they comment on the triple jump at that exact time?
Yep.
Skewed data from the get-go because of the way they already packaged the sport, because you already hide certain events. So how can I have a positive opinion about triple jump if I've never seen it, if you don't show it? So you're already skewing your data, which is, so it's bullshit.
It's case in point.
Yeah.
Because discus triple jump being dropped, they're never in the two-hour schedule that's on television, which they're now cutting to 90 minutes because no one's got an attention span anymore.
Yeah.
But... if you're going to show the triple jump at 5 p.m. and then show three jumps at 7:45 in the night, it doesn't look like anybody cares. When half the time they looked at Twitter, we're begging them to show a jump.
Yeah.
It makes us so angry.
And they didn't ask anybody in Africa, apart from South Africa. If you went to Kenya and Ethiopia, you'd get a lot more distant responses. But obviously they cut the distance down to 3,000 meters, which... isn't even an event. So
if they'd, they'd surveyed the 200 people that were in Doha, you would have had a different answer.
Yeah.
I'm actually insulted by it. Like, it's legitimately embarrassing to think that they put forward this concept, oh, we did a survey and these are the results of the... I mean, would you please stop? I mean, nobody would ever take that kind of survey seriously. Again, skewed from the get-go, makes no sense. You made a decision behind closed doors, what events that you think you can get rid of, and you came up with this wishy-washy, bullshitty excuse to tie it on to public opinion, and that's just embarrassing for everybody. At least have the balls to say, this is a decision that we've made. So I feel like I just couldn't even bother talking about that stupid survey, but yeah, I think a fair point in terms of Africa, all they included was South Africa. I don't even think there was a South American country attached to it. It's just laughable.
And the whole, like, also click-throughs on social media, wasn't it? That was the other reason of which videos performed the best. But then it depends which ones they're posting the most and which ones are being... Are they posting every event or not? I mean, I don't even know if they post any of the field events, really, unless it's like a meeting record or something. But they'll always post 100 metres because it's, you know, 10 seconds and everyone wants to see that, apparently. But... And that's the other
thing. Well, they probably had... more clicks for Blessed losing a wig in a sandpit.
Exactly, yeah.
Because that's how they framed it to the public. You're only going to get the answers based on the bias that you're showing because you're not showing an amazing end to a steeplechase race because something stupid happened.
Yeah.
I mean, you think that they're talking about what the fans want, and whenever the Diamond League account tweeted about the changes, nobody ever replies to Diamond League tweets, ever. Under normal circumstances. But there was like hundreds of replies to it, and every single one was negative. So that's the fans responding. And it just occurred to me tonight, doing this, that it's setting a really dangerous precedent because the IOC has made no secret over the fact that they're bringing a new sport that they want to number of athletes. So if World Athletics ditch these events from the premium circuit, that could just give them
100%.
Yeah, that's the route we're heading down, isn't it? You know, will the triple jump even be in the Olympics in 2032 or maybe even 2028? You know, you don't know, because look at what's happened with the track cycling. That's an example. They've absolutely destroyed that schedule. The velodrome is half the medals it used to be because they want to have space for BMXing and all the other cycling events, which is fine. But you still need to, when you're picking and choosing, you need to, because they're saying that, oh, we're going to review this every year. But how are you going to then prove that the triple jump was more exciting this year if it's only the second tier of the sport? which we still don't know about. That's another thing that annoyed me. They mentioned this continental tour, and no, we don't know what it is. Mm. But I mean, are we going to be able to watch that? Are they still going to be able to get wild cards for the world champs?
No.
Are they still getting the same prize money? You know, there's no sense of equality there, is there?
None at all.
But the only person I've seen that was supportive of dropping any events is Michael Johnson.
Yeah,
and you can't tell me that if he was still running the 200 metres, he would be happy to lose the chance to win a 50 grand prize, be seen on primetime TV winning races. My ass.
Yeah.
I think fundamentally his point was that the sport needs a bit of a shake-up, and I agree with that. To not stand up for the athletes, particularly someone like Christian Taylor, I thought was really disappointing because, you know, regardless, the way these guys found out via social media is just appalling.
Yeah.
It's disgusting. And I think exactly that. They know there's highly intelligent people. They know that this is a step towards removing their sport from the Olympic Games. That's absolutely what's going on here.
Yeah, it's like Noah Lyles was obviously one of the first to tweet. He was like, what? No 200 metres? And Adam Jamili and Emma Coburn, they were all posting similar things. And it's baffling that they find out at the same time that we do. Mm-hmm. And they don't really get a chance to kind of respond to it or even query it. I mean, the fact that 200 metres was in the top five, wasn't it, of the most popular events. But it's too close to the 100, so we'll just have that. It's like, well, you've got the 8, the 15, and the 3,000, so how does that work?
Noah Lyle, you know, they've been so desperate for their Bolt replacement, and Noah, all the personality in the world, and obviously he's good at, great at 100 as well, but, and it is the better sprint.
Yeah, at the
Plus, you've got, the misplaced, no trust left in Christian Colburn. And sorry, but he has the personality of a discarded tea bag. And you've got Noah Lyles, who can draw people in.
Yeah. I don't know if you saw. Did you see Robin Brayley's tweet, which I thought summed it up quite nicely? She just put like, oh, IAAF. Oh, we need a new Bolt. Who's the new Bolt?
Oh, yeah.
Also IAAF. We're not having the 200 metres. It's silly. I was hoping they'd take maybe look at the events and then say, okay, maybe we'll ditch the men's 100 and keep the women's 100 and have the men's 2 and then ditch the women's 2. I thought they'd maybe do it like that, but they just decided to get rid of each event.
Know, but then obviously I think they're quite keen on Dina being front and centre of stuff, and obviously 200, they're running faster times than people have in the last couple of years. It just seems so backward.
Yeah, I don't know how you can grow the sport by showing less of it. I think that's the bottom line.
Yeah.
What I find interesting about an event like cutting an event like the discus is, the first thing that came to my mind was that they've chosen the events that they're going to cut from the Olympics. But to me, the discus is so synonymous with the Olympics. I just have that statue.
Isn't the symbol the guy with the discus?
Yes.
Yeah.
So I'm just baffled. There's so many things wrong with this. And I've read so many tweets from the Athleticos, and I think we're all singing from the same hymn sheet. We are the sport, and going back to that, from the athlete's perspective, they are number one here. And the fact that these athletes who have been tremendous ambassadors for the sport, Christian Taylor, like an exceptional ambassador for the sport, consistent, clean, well-spoken, polite, gracious to fans. I mean, you couldn't get a better ambassador for the sport, really. And to treat somebody like him in the way that the IAAF have is just, it's like anybody's been in a job and they have a great colleague and you watch your boss treat your colleague like shit, you realize, oh, my job is crap. I need to get out of here. Because if they're going to do that to the good guys, then you're fucked. And I think, you know, it speaks volumes, absolutely volumes. The fact that the disrespect that he's shown, the disrespect that Catherine Bargwin, like all of these incredible athletes, to not bring them into this conversation, it's just absolutely appalling. But again, it goes back to who's running the sport at the moment.
Well, that's what I don't understand, is I don't see what the point of that is, actually. What are they trying to achieve here? I know they're maybe trying to streamline it a bit more, but I just don't understand what we're gaining from it. Yeah. I mean,
I don't know.
The whole cutting it to 90 minutes, that's my issue. I mean, I work in sports TV. I kind of understand the right broadcasters and rights and stuff like that. And I understand that a shorter program will gain higher ratings just because it's shorter. But and that obviously attracts advertisers and all that kind of stuff. But I think I don't understand how that half an hour is going to make any difference at all. I don't understand how you can think, right, the Diamond League's off for 2 hours. Actually, you know, I need to do something for half an hour, then I'll watch the rest of it.
Mm.
You don't do that. You're either committed to the 2 hours or you're not. You're not just going to dip in and out.
Part of the problem as well is they're too focused on television coverage.
Yeah.
We've moved with the times. Half the time, I don't watch TV.
Yeah.
I watch, you know, YouTube, Amazon Prime, Netflix.
Yeah.
Stream.
I'm not watching.
Yeah.
Yeah. Live TV, I really don't watch it very often. And, you know, youth of today.
But that's where
they don't either.
That's where we're going to be innovative. You know, you can have split screens.
Exactly.
You can have four events going at the same time on the one screen.
Yeah.
That's my argument with it, with TV, because the only thing in terms of the TV industry that is bringing in ratings is live sport. That's what broadcasters want, because they know it is the one of the event television that you can't obviously stream it, but nobody really likes to watch sport delay because you miss the moment. And especially with social media, it's tied together.
Yeah.
You're watching sport and you're talking about it and you're sharing your thoughts about it. And that's like gold dust in TV at the moment.
Yeah.
And you say you need to reflect that online. And I think we're in a day and age where we can show a live stream of the track and a live stream of the field.
Yeah.
And a combined stream if you want to watch everything. Give people the choice.
But I think part of the problem is the absolute impossibility of actually watching any athletics outside of the Diamond League.
Yes.
They've got a huge opportunity here with this new second tier one to have a live stream available to us.
Yeah.
It's just beyond
comprehension
that they can't even do that.
Yeah, definitely. We need to have a live YouTube stream where we can just watch it easily. Because that's one of the main issues that I have with the Diamond League, is that nobody knows when it's on or how to watch it. That's what they should be throwing their weight around with. Not pissing off the athletes. I'd rather they piss off the meet organisers and say, actually, Oslo, sorry, we're having your meet on a Friday, not a Thursday. Or, you know,
change it doesn't help.
Yeah, that's what they need to say, is have it on one night every 2 weeks or something and say, that's the Diamond League night. Because I know a lot of sports fans who would probably watch athletics more if they knew when it was on. It's like I'm like having to remind, oh, the Diamond League's on tonight. Oh, it was on a Tuesday night last time. What's, you know, it's confusing for people. And the fact the league as a whole, nobody knows what that means and how people get the trophies. And yeah, there's a lot of issues with the Diamond League itself that they need to fix that they haven't. And they've gone down the wrong path of trying to make it shorter and accessible, but it's actually almost more confusing now.
How long has the Diamond League been going? When did it change from Golden League? Is it
2010 was the first 10? Year they did it, yeah.
Okay, so since 2010, my other half has been asking me every year, what is the Diamond League? And every year I have to explain the concept. And that he's like, why is it still going in September? I'm like, well, it's a league. He still doesn't get it. So... yeah,
but that's the thing. But it's not a league anymore, is it? Because they have a final.
Exactly.
it's like having the Premier League all season, then saying actually, the last match, the two people at the top are just going to fight it out for the win.
You know, the product is there. I say,
exactly.
You know, look for it. Not doing Nitro Athletics and
absolutely.
Yeah.
And this is what I'm interested in terms of We Are the Sport. Are you going to acknowledge that you do have these amazing athletes, that you do have this amazing product? Is there any chance that somebody will come to the Athletics Association and say, okay, you guys have been thrown out of the Diamond League, let's set up your own meet just specifically for some jumps, just specifically for the jumps and throws?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good point. I think we need to bring the sport to different people in different ways. Like you say, having a high jump meet just on its own, or having, you know, a throws fest or something, something like Highgate, what they do with the night of the 10,000. Yeah. They've made the 10,000 meters, which is arguably the most boring track event, the most exciting. I've been to it, and it's like, wow, this is incredible. It's a festival. Mm-hmm. It's more than just people running around a track. You know, it's they make it an event, and if we had that for throws, I think it would be just as successful.
Yeah.
I mean, because that's my worry with the Diamond League, is that by shortening it again, the fans in the stadium, are they getting shortchanged as well?
Absolutely.
I mean, can I be asked to go to Gateshead just to watch 90 minutes of quality athletics and an hour of Club Connect relays? Do you know what I mean?
It would take you 90 minutes to queue up for a bottle of water.
Exactly. It's like, you feel like you're going to miss out on it all. And I know they're going to have like non-Diamond League events and all that, and they are still going to have a few 200-meter races and things like that, but that's another issue with the Diamond League, is that you never know when it's a Diamond League event or when it's not. Mm. And I think if they structure it so they have all of the like Diamond League events first in that first hour, and then have a Diamond League hour, the fight where it climaxes into 1 hour where all the field events finish, and they can schedule it so that they have their final jumps and throws in between the track races, so they get their moment, and then have the big crescendo of all these races in quick succession. I think that's the way they should market it, and I hope they do that, have a proper schedule where they allow it to breathe in terms of the field events get their moment, and it's not just track race, because sometimes that can be a bit overwhelming even as a fan watching at home. It's just you don't have time to reflect on what's just happened before the next race is on.
Something else that I think, if we're talking about potential changes that could occur that could enhance the sport, graphics have come a long way in sports media. I've seen in other sports the way they use graphics so well, and expressing how far 18 meters is, how far Christian Taylor has actually jumped. But even things like where a performance stands relative to their season's best, relative to their personal best, relative to their world records. We shy away from what the world records are, from what the top lists are, again, because a lot of them are doubtful or doubted. But you know, we can't just pretend that these world records don't exist, because people want to know what Dina has run relative to what her personal best is, relative to what the fastest time ever is, you know, and we make zero effort to show that, how historic certain performances are. Even on a personal level, I think people would be really interested to say, wow, this is Dina's second fastest run of the year, third fastest run in history. Those facts, those stats that we rely on people like Statman John to tweet about, they should be presented live.
Yeah, I do think in Doha they made a bit of an effort with the graphics, especially for the field events. I did feel like you could kind of follow who was where. They had the top 12 were actually displayed, which was nice. Like, this is good. And they were trying to get like more like this, you know, speed of things and the javelin trajectory and each phase of the triple jump broken down, which is that's a step in the right direction, but they definitely need to improve on that. And it's like you say, when we shouldn't be having to rely on the commentators to say, oh, that was a national record, and I want to know that the Danish steeplechaser has set a national record in eighth place, because I think that's interesting. And it flashes up on the screen for like a millisecond and it's gone. And I don't know how we could do it, whether we have a little ticker bar at the bottom, I don't know, that just has all these information bits on or something like that. But there's definitely ways around. But that's what social media is for as well. That's where you show those clips and make it more accessible. And that is a problem, like I say, with the Diamond League. If we're not watching it live, you want to catch up on it, but you don't just want to sit and watch, you know, the full race on YouTube. You want to see quick, snappy highlights and sexy graphics and all that kind of stuff.
So,
you know, one complaint I see on YouTube, you know, obviously they post the Diamond League race, is that they put like 2-1 as a spoiler.
Yeah.
Video. And every single one, like,
yeah, that
people
is
catch up, they don't know who won in the title.
That is the biggest issue. That is always a problem, because obviously they want to get people to see if Noel Ayles has run 19.5. They want to say that in the title, but at the same time, if you want to catch up, you don't want to know that. So maybe after 24 hours, they can rename the title or something.
So to be a bit of a devil's advocate here, okay, so we've talked about how prominent the athletes are within this sport. It's all about them, and we'd have no sport without them. Do you think the athletes should have more responsibilities on them in terms of selling themselves in order to sell the sport? There are a clutch of athletes who are forever giving interviews, are forever being patient with fans, are online. They sell their story. We know them inside out. And then there are certain athletes who, either by design or just because there isn't the interest there, perhaps it's just a personality situation, who we don't really know. Do we think there should be more emphasis on that component and more expectations from the athletes, if they are the sport, to sell themselves in order to sell the sport?
It's hard to say, because obviously, you know, social media is not great for some people's mental health. So if they find themselves getting into a pattern of consistently checking it and then finding they're getting horrible messages, and that can start to affect them. So they do need to have some kind of barrier between their personal life and that. Plus, there's the fact, obviously, we've noticed since Alison Felix has left Nike, her personality has actually started to come out. And it seems that she may have felt held back by the expectations that she felt was probably put on her by Nike to have a certain
image,
way of acting, certain image, and that seems to have been broken down a bit more. So I think some are more reluctant to show their real personality for fear of reprisals from their sponsors, whereas you've got some who are naturally really effervescent and bubbly, like Dina. So it's hard to say what they should do and what they shouldn't do.
The other thing that's happening at the moment with is that Adam and Laura Muir and co are suing BOA.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
40 issue, whenever the IOC have, you know, they have relaxed things so that they can work with their personal sponsors, but the British Association is like, no. So these guys are trying to market themselves, and another body of suits is trying to prevent them.
That's because in America they actually relaxed Rule 40, didn't they? They said it's fine, because they've been campaigning for years in America because they don't get much sponsorship, state sponsorship. So the Olympics is the one chance where they really cash in on it in America, because they don't get the world champs aren't a really big deal over there. So that's their one moment, and obviously they don't get, some governments give money for Olympic medals, we don't, America don't. So that is the chance, and they should be allowed to say thank you to, you know, my personal sponsor. I don't have a problem with that. I don't think it, you know, as they say, the Olympics, it should be a sacred thing and nobody should get paid. But I'm like, well, if they're just saying thank you, I don't mind that. That's not an issue to me. It doesn't disregard the Olympic movement or anything like that.
Yeah.
No, it's a short career. They've got to make their money while they can. Plus, I think Adam said that the schedule for them stopping thanking sponsors is way before the qualification ends, so they don't know if they're actually going to be at the Olympics or not.
So
it really puts them in a bit of a bind in that situation, but I couldn't care less if he turned up in July saying, yeah, cheers Muller, thanks for the yogurts.
Absolutely.
Couldn't care less. Make your money, Adam.
That is one of the fundamental issues of the sport, isn't it? I think there's too many people being gagged to not say what they want and not say what they think, and for fear of losing money, which is what's keeping them going. A lot of them don't have much money. A lot of them are in full-time employment or part-time employment. And I think you need to give them the due that they're working hard and they are creating moments for the sport that the sport is making money out of. And they're not seeing the benefit of that. And that's not fair. And they should be allowed to speak out against that. But they can't, because they feel they're going to lose their sponsorship. So it's quite a vicious circle, really.
I think that's why we're seeing this change, and the last few weeks have been so interesting with the Athletes Association, with that court case. And what I find really interesting is kind of dividing and conquering there. So you've got Adam and you've got KJT fighting the BOA, is the British Olympic Committee there. And then you've got Dina, she's pairing up with Christian to fight the World Athletics. We all know they're all close friends. But this communication to say, okay, you go for that bit, we'll go for this bit. And it's real power to the athletes. And that's the way it fundamentally it should be.
And is this, should we be presenting them better? Do you think we should be, is like you say, marketing them a little more? Is that what they should be doing?
Personally, I love a story. And I think because I follow Christian Taylor on social media and I know what a gent he is, but I don't know a lot about his story. You know, for example, the extent of the rivalry with Will Clay is fascinating. It's gone on so long. If you're Will Clay, you must hate this guy, even though I'm sure they're
he's
friends.
He's too nice.
Yeah, but it's a fascinating story. And it's a tricky one. It's tricky to figure out how you can deliver those stories in an authentic way, because I think when we watch World Championships on BBC, for example, the BBC roll out different VT on different athletes, and it doesn't always seem authentic, and it's very much, can we just be watching the footage? A whole summer of watching athletics should give you the opportunity not only to watch the events and watch people improve the performance, but to develop that narrative. What are certain athletes going through? How have their rivalries manifested themselves over the years?
Well, even telling them across the season itself could help. I mean, I'm just the way the Diamond League is broadcast, you know, it's pretty standard. You start with general views of Stockholm. We're in Stockholm for the blah, blah, blah. It's so dated, isn't it?
Yeah.
Why not start with a recap of this is where the 400 metres have been this year. NASA's raced this time in so-and-so. Sean A's done this time. Yeah. Tonight they go head-to-head.
Yeah.
You know, sell it. Sell those storylines. Make it exciting. Don't just be like, here's a standard generic Diamond League meet that you've probably seen a million times before. You need to say why this specific one you're watching right now is special and why you should not tune off and stay with it. You know, that's
absolutely
what they need to be doing.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Just to summarize, we're all agreed that the athletes are the sport and it's all about them. Do we agree that the sport needs some change to attract a bigger audience?
Yeah, massively, yeah.
Yeah,
is the number one issue.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You need to remove, you know, the bloat. Stop taking 2 hours to introduce a 10-second race when other things could be happening. Because they manage it at small meets. They can bang it out fast as you like. We just don't need that dead time when there's plenty of things to fit into that time.
Yeah, which is why 90 minutes is a bit too short for me. I think 2 hours is the right time. They just need to use it properly.
Fascinating times ahead, though, and I know that the guys in the Athletes Association are going to Monaco. It's watch this space, guys.
Yeah, it's interesting because La Villanie was introduced into the world, the Athletics Council, I think, which is that's part of the IWF, isn't it?
Yeah.
And Stefanidis there as well, so there are two that are in both, which I think is quite interesting. It'll be interesting how that works.
So, I think, are we okay to move on to the next significant thing that happened in our sport?
Yeah.
Let's just focus on the absolute heroine of athletics at the moment, Mary Kane. She came forward to discuss and to talk about her experience in the Nike Oregon project and the physical and mental abuse that she endured under Salazar. And I think it's been an extremely insightful conversation that she started. Extremely important. Again, it's one of these situations where I think it's the beginning of a positive shift in athletics, particularly for females.
Just to summarise a little bit, I think we were all quite puzzled when Mary suddenly disappeared off the scene and just left the Oregon Project quite suddenly. I think we assumed she might have just decided to step out, perhaps focus on her education, and she moved to the other side of America, didn't she? Possibly.
Yeah.
Really, like as far away as she could get. So I think nobody spoke about it. I think we just assumed that was the way it went because the performances, I think, had started dropping off a little bit. And then in the last few weeks, she's revealed what actually happened, and it's just horrifying.
Mary was a teenage phenomenon, right? Incredible in high school. And even as a teenager, I think she was second at nationals behind Jenny Simpson. And she got a phone call from Salazar. So London Olympics were the first Olympics that she said she paid attention to. And Mo Farah, Galen Rupp being two athletes that she noticed. So when Salazar rang to essentially recruit her, she obviously thought, well, he is coaching the best of the best. This is an amazing opportunity. And her family thought so too. So that was 2013, you're right, Kerry. maybe just after the Olympics. It transpired that Salazar had absolutely no idea how to coach young females, and judging by Cara Goucher, females in general. And essentially, there was physical, mental abuse. This teenage phenomenon, you're expecting her to burst onto the scene and run incredibly fast. And when that's not happening, instead of looking at your training regime, blaming the athlete whose body is changing because they're getting older, forcing them into such a strict regime that they no longer have periods, that they no longer have self-esteem, that they no longer have control over what they're eating, then they try to take control over the situation by not eating. And the dangers within that, I think they're very prevalent across sport. And Chris, during the summer, I know you visited UCLA where Caitlin Ohashi, a gymnast there, talks about this a lot, about how she was shamed as well. Again, that similar age where you are supposed to go through puberty, you're supposed to naturally put on weight, your body's changing. And yet a male coach, again, not understanding that situation and shaming the athlete for growing, essentially.
Well, yeah, that's the issue. And I think it's more the fact that there were hardly any females on the coaching staff, or even like nutritionists and people like that. They're all basically Salazar's mates by the sounds of it, and not all of them were verified, I don't think. I think they were just, you know, this is what I think. She's obviously too heavy at this. And it's like, you shouldn't be saying that anyway to a young woman. But the fact that it was often quite public as well, and even reading a lot of the messages from the former training partners and other distance runners who were witness to it, they were almost apologetic, like, I'm sorry I didn't speak up, because I think Cara said I was the number one girl, and I wanted to stay like that, and I didn't want to, you know, it's quite a toxic culture, isn't it? It doesn't sound like a very nice environment to be in, and I don't know how anyone can even begin to defend Salazar anymore. It's just disgusting.
Yeah, the fact he said as well that even after she left, he wanted to go back.
Yeah.
You know, this culture of like toxic, abusive relationship that, you know, it's disturbing. And the fact that Salazar came out and denied it, I mean, it's bullshit. I mean, it raised eyebrows, I remember at the time, like, why she left. And like, then everything, it's all just put into place.
I think we may even have discussed it on the pod. I think we may have just said, oh, I think she's just gone to college.
Yeah.
Something like that. But, you know, event, I think stepping away ultimately probably saved her life.
I don't know. It's such a loaded thing for me. There's a macro and a micro point to it. I mean, Carol, the first thing, first and foremost, what she described and what you talk about there too is this. It's grooming, you know, it seemed to me that Salazar really groomed his athletes, this whole buy-in that we're a team, we're special, don't talk to other athletes, you know, and when you behave like that and you get this cultish behavior, you can get...
Well, it is, isn't it?
You can get them to do anything. That freaks me out. That
it was the same. Yeah, it was the reaction of the athletes in Doha.
Exactly.
Who were so defensive of him against the other people who were actually pointing out what was wrong with the situation.
Exactly.
And putting the blame on someone like Jenny Simpson, who is actually saying, hang on, there's something really wrong here. Yeah. And they're blaming her.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it seems to be far reaching. I mean, it's not just people who are connected with that project, but people who are connected with Nike. And they're, you know, even an article with Jordan Hasse today talking about how Paula's a new coach. I won't even go into that. But she talked about, oh, I feel sorry for both Mary and for Alberto. Because, I mean, he definitely didn't mean to do that. He harmed her, evidenced by her testimony. He harmed this child, which means he was absolutely incompetent at his job. And he went and sought to coach this child. And I think that's my macro fundamental problem with sport in general, is that sport is for health, first and foremost. The reason why we want children to participate in sport and physical activity is for health purposes, for future health. So they have good cardiovascular fitness, good mental health, good social opportunities. And so when we start to put kids into elite sports with adults, in a group of adults, I think we are putting them in danger from the get-go. It's happened in British sport too. I think it's Bobby Clay that I'm thinking of. Correct me if I'm wrong. Where you push so hard that you don't go through puberty, which means then you're going to have significant issues with your bone density, which means you're going to fracture. And the long-term damage that this has physically and then mentally, we should be better at protecting our young people.
Yeah, and obviously, like you mentioned in Britain, obviously, there was the article about what Charles Van Comeny was saying to various athletes.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's amazing that this has almost been kept quiet for so long and it's potentially still going on. Who knows?
As far as I'm concerned, a four-year ban for Salazar is not long enough.
Agreed.
Did you see the state on his so-called apology as well? It was a typical... Yeah. Deflection. Oh, I'm sorry if what I did offended you. I'm sorry that you were offended by what I did. Deflect.
Typical abuse.
He's an abuser.
Absolutely.
And that's evident. And he should not be allowed back.
Yeah. And the fact is, but 6 months ago you wanted to come back to us, and it's like again, that's
yeah.
that's putting it back on her again. And I don't know if you read Tiana Bartoletta did a blog again about Mary Kane and about that specific line in Salazar's, and she explained about abuse and all that and her relationship with it, and it was such a good article if you ever get a chance to read that.
Yeah,
exactly. I think she's someone in particular that can relate to everything that's gone on there particularly, but it's if anyone would know, that's how people like that get into people's brains.
There are so many people in positions of power who are desperately, desperately uneducated. And I would say Salazar understands nothing about the female body, about nutrition.
Yeah, yeah. And I think more females working in coaching teams and nutrition and all that, every team that has a female athlete needs to have a female coach. I think that should be a rule. I just hope that she gets some sort of happy ending where she can just enjoy running. I think she's obviously, whether it's competitively or not, I hope she just gets to be able to run and enjoy it.
Could I just mention quickly, sort of related to this, I don't know if anyone read it before, but there's, she's not that well known, but Scottish pole vaulter called Anna Gordon. Mm. So she, a little while ago, came out and said that her coach had abused her, and the abuse she got back from other athletes because he had got into their heads or they were so defensive of him was staggering.
Horrendous.
Yeah, there's I'll share it later. There's a YouTube video she made about it, and it's just unbelievable. But she's moved to Finland now to try and get on and in the pole vault. So hopefully she'll appear next year.
People, I think, just lack the ability to understand a very simple fact. Two things can be true at the same time. Kerry, we could have a mutual friend who treats me absolutely wonderful way and treats you appallingly, and that person in my eyes is a wonderful guy and to you is the most horrendous person on the planet. Two things can be true at the same time. You can behave one way to somebody and behave another way to somebody else. In fact, most people do. We show one side to somebody and we show another side to somebody else.
So just not on board with all the victim shaming that people get for speaking out. So
athletics probably, certainly in the level of coaching and management, is very much men. So hopefully her coming forward is just opening the floodgates with regards to how women are treated within sport, not just athletics. Obviously, gymnastics has been heavily in the headlines.
Mm-hmm.
Young women, girls, put in positions where they have men in power over them.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Whenever you look at it in other works of like, say within teaching, the rules that were in place are there for a very good reason when it comes to interaction with younger people. Mm-hmm. So why is the same thing not done in professional sport? Because it could ruin their entire lives.
But you would think it would be even more necessary considering it would involve them possibly being very close contact with people who are partially clothed in a leotard.
Yeah.
Being next to somebody, you should, it's just all kinds of worrying.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, a lot of what Mary describe traveling to different competitions and how that worked. I don't know if anybody's ever read the American Safe Sport Policy, but it was literally like violation, violation, violation.
Mm.
That's something we are lacking, definitely, within track and field is, you know, a safe sport policy. This is a really good opportunity to reevaluate how we coach, how we train, how we treat our athletes.
Okay, yeah, well, that's the heavy chat out the way. It's obviously been a bit of a discussion so far and a debate because, you know, we care about the sport and we want to see it go in the right direction and prosper. So it might sound like we've been having a bit of a moan, but we do love the sport and it is the awards time at the end of the year. And the IAAF have got their shortlist of their five. Okay, let's start with the men. We've got Cheptegei. I was so pleased to see he made the shortlist. Mm-hmm. I didn't think he would. I was really pleased to see him on there. Sam Kendricks, Kipchoge, which I think a lot of people are finding a bit like, it was a great moment for the sport, but should he really be on there? And obviously Noah Lyles and Carsten Vorholm. So, I mean, I know who I want to win, so I think Vorholm should be the winner, but what do you guys think?
Yeah, I'd say he's ticking all the boxes, obviously fastest time since Kevin Young, is that his name?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
world champion, European indoor 400 meter record, European indoor champion. Yeah, ticking all the boxes for me, I think.
And undefeated, I think wasn't he? Undefeated this year. So
Yeah. So
I do hear what you're saying, but I also think in 10 years' time, the first thing I will think of is the time that Kipchoge broke 2 hours, more than how great Vorholm was. Hopefully by then he'll have the world record. Anyway, he'll have an even better year.
My favourite thing is I'm just looking at the IAAF website, or the worldathletics.org website, with its fancy new design. And the way they've described Kipchoge's achievements for this year, they put, won the London Marathon in the course record, blah, blah, blah. And then ran 1 hour 59.4 for 42.195 kilometres in Vienna. So that's their way of saying he broke 2 hours for the marathon, but he didn't because he doesn't count. But I agree. For legacy review, it's 10, 15 years' time, we'll look back on this year and we probably will think of Kipchoge, won't we? I think over the rest of them. But yeah, I don't know. He did win it last year and I think I'd like to see Carsten win it.
Yeah, fair. What do you reckon, Carol?
Yeah, I think Carsten. You know, he's always out there. He doesn't shy away from competition like some do. And as Gabby was saying, he's a BAM. He deserves it.
Yeah, BAM of the year.
So who are the ladies in the running?
Well, very, very strong list, I think, for the women.
Mm.
Shelly-Ann Fraser-Pryce, legend. Obviously, Hassan is in there as well. Bridget Koskay, again, marathon world record. Delilah Muhammad, that's two world records for her this year. And Rojas in the triple jump. I mean, I can't believe Muhammad's not on there personally, but it was a strong year.
Yeah, she would have been my choice, actually.
Yeah, I think...
For me, Delilah, I think. Break the world record twice.
Exactly.
Yeah, come on.
And people forget that world record was around just as long as Paula's in the marathon.
Mm.
People are like, oh, it's a long time since that marathon record went, but four hurdles has been pretty much the same time. And to do it twice and also won the world gold. I mean, Koskay, did the world record, but didn't do the world champ. So I know it's tough to do both, but it's the year of the four hurdles.
And the marathon. To me, if it's not Delilah Muhammad, it would be Bridget. Whereas in the men's, it's the 400 meter hurdler and the marathon runner. So it is really interesting how that's panned out. Yeah, so watch this space. When are those awards announced, guys?
Fairly soon, I think. Yeah.
23rd, that's Saturday, isn't it?
Mm. Well, I imagine if the Athletics Union heading to Monaco, I would assume that's because everybody's there for the awards.
Yeah, absolutely. That all makes sense.
They should storm the stage.
Yes.
Do a Kanye.
Yeah, imagine it. Seb, I'm going to let you have your moment. But first.
Oh, look at you with your pop culture reference, Christopher Brown. Oh, I love it. Brilliant.
Then, just on another light note to finish on, did anyone see the video of Borrega doing the shot put?
Yeah.
Because obviously the 5,000 metres is not the Diamond League
attempt,
anymore.
Actually.
Yeah, he's training the shot put. And he was pretty good.
He's about as good as Mo was in the javelin and Superstars.
So yeah, I love that humour that even though his event's not in the Diamond League anymore, he's like, right, I'm going to try a new one, try the shot put out.
You got to laugh or you cry.
Laugh
because your life
or
is
cry.
Going.
I think that's summed up the podcast this week, guys. Laugh or cry. So much going on, and it's a case of watch this space. It definitely feels like there's a shift. There is significant change coming within the sport. Okay, guys, so that's our 40th episode. Can you believe it?
40.
We have got to 40. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, appropriate that hashtag rule 40 is trying to be appealed.
Yes, absolutely.
Hashtag episode 40.
Hashtag episode 40. And hashtag episode 41 is going to be the Christmas special. A lot more lighthearted than tonight's, topic. We'll have Gabby back again and we'll also have Dave. Fun things planned, let's put it that way. If you have never listened to our Christmas podcast before, do go back on our iTunes account and have a listen, and you'll see what we mean. You'll see what's in store for you. It's basically an athletics panto. So that's it for this episode of Trackastic. I've been Jamie at McGann Jamie.
I've been Carol at Flick22S.
I've been Chris at Chris Brown Sport.
And I've been Kerry at the Petit Cushion. Please, another please. Blam song, another please. Jessica Ennis. Good night. Track and Field Podcast. This is Trackastic.